I have had what amounts to a bad technology weekend. And so if the computer here happens to like blow up or catch on fire or die in some other way, I will not be surprised by it. But we had some printer problems this morning, so I'm going to do a first here and give my lesson from my notes on the computer. So we'll see how this goes. Not so long ago, a month ago, the hospital leadership team, the whole hospital, whole healthcare system leadership team, got together for a leadership seminar, and there were things going on that I wasn't able to attend that meeting, and about a week later, I received a manila envelope, and in that manila envelope was a book, and it was a book on leadership, and I took the book out and put it on my desk, and it sat there ever since. I can't even remember what the title of the book is. I know the picture has some red and black on it. I don't even know what the picture. It's sitting on my desk. I just don't remember what the title of it is. And the reason is that I was going to put it in my bookcase in my office, but it's filled with all kinds of other leadership books that have been given to me. All except one I really haven't read. And you know, there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of books on leadership, hundreds of thousands of books on business and how we ought to interact with each other, how we can be better at business or better at being a leader. But in the end, there really is a lot taught in the Bible about business, about how we ought to interact with one another, how we ought to conduct business. Whether we're the employee or whether we are the employer or whether we're producing something and trying to sell it to others, the Bible speaks a lot about our business interactions. The Bible speaks a lot about money, but in that it also speaks about how we should interact in business. So this morning, we're going to spend some time and look at biblical principles of business. And with that, we'll look at some general things, and we'll talk about Bible teachings to employees, Bible teachings to employers, and then we'll finish up by talking just a little bit about success, because I don't think anybody goes into business to fail, so we'll talk about the natural outcome of going into business and that being success. So let's just first get some general principles, some biblical rules about business conduct. First and foremost, this could all be summed up in one word, and that's honesty. That's something that is not very prevalent in the world of business today, is it? If you've ever tried to negotiate a contract, I really despise contract negotiations, mostly because it's almost expected that you're going to try to deceive, cheat, do as little as possible. You're in it just for yourself. That's what it feels like the contract negotiation is about. I just don't play that game. I'm just completely honest when it comes to contract negotiations. I just tell people, here's what I want, and if they can't provide that, then that's, you know, then for the most part, I'm not going to try to cheat someone. But if we were to describe the biblical principles of conducting business in a word, it would be honesty. Let's first start in Leviticus chapter 19. Such a strange verse Well, in this context, it will make sense, but as you're reading through Leviticus 19, it seems a little strange. But anyhow, Leviticus chapter 19, verse 35 and 36. You shall do no injustice in judgment, in measurement of length, weight, and volume. You shall have honest scales, honest weights, an honest ephah, and an honest hin. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. God tells the children of Israel, when dealing in business, that's really what this is about, to be honest, to have true weights, true measurements, true lengths, volumes. Have honest weights and measurements. That's the message that God gives them here. So when you sell something, sell it for exactly what it is. If you have a product that you produce, I know there's some in the congregation that make things and sell them to others. I think of Theta and Rachel and Amanda who make things and sell things. I'm sure there's others too. But when you go and sell things, represent your product for exactly what it is. In the world, if you don't do that, what's it called? It's called false advertising, deceptive advertising. Just because it's near and dear to my heart, I think about ice cream. Right? Have you gone to the supermarket to buy ice cream? Right? And you look, and here is the. It used to be 1 gallon, right? Well, now it's not 1 gallon. It's like a liter or something. I don't even know what a liter is. I just know that when I get the 1 gallon and the 1 liter and put them side by side, the price is the same, right? And when you look at the front of the container, they look the same. But then when you turn them sideways, the liter is a lot thinner than the gallon. But yet it's the same price. Now, that's not really false advertising, but it's sort of deceptive, isn't it? There's lots of companies that have gotten in trouble for false advertising. They get fined for it. Why? Because in business, there's supposed to be honesty. You don't claim, you don't claim to the person who you're trying to sell something to, oh, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and then come to find out it doesn't deliver. This applies to more than just quantity as well, and more to ice cream, more than just the ice cream too. Have you ever gone to a garage sale and bought something and thinking that this item was in perfect working order, only to find out when you got it home later that something was broken? Well, see, that's really what we're talking about here. Don't deceive people when you're doing business with them. And, it works the other way, too. Have you ever been to a garage sale and you're like, oh, this is nothing. I wouldn't pay $5 for this. I'd pay 50 cents for it. And then when you walk away, what do? Oh, yeah, this thing's like worth $20. Well, this is what the Bible has to say about that. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 14. It is good for nothing, cries the buyer, but when he has gone his way, then he boasts. I'm always surprised. Our television channels here recently changed, and one of my favorite shows is back available to me. It's American Pickers. I don't know if you ever watched it. I don't know why. Maybe it's just like I like collecting junk and makes me feel like maybe some of my stuff is worth something. But you ever watch that show and the guy is going to buy something from someone? They say, oh, you can have that for $20. He's like, oh, no. This is worth way more than $20. This is worth $100. Or they'll be honest with someone and say, well, listen, yeah, that really is worth $100. I need to make a profit on it. I'll buy it from you for $80. That way it gives me $20 to make. They're just honest in their interactions with people. But not everyone is that way. If someone were to say, I'll sell that to you, that $100 item for $20, they might be all over that. That's not what the Bible tells us. The Bible says that we should not, as Proverbs 20 and 14 says, it's good for nothing, cries the buyer, but when he's gone away, then he boasts. In the end, you might fool the buyer, you might fool the seller, but you cannot fool God. Proverbs 16:11, honest weights and scales are the Lord's. All the weights in his bag are his work. God sees all. God knows that if you've got dishonest weights, however that might apply to your situation, he knows what you're doing. Given a choice, being honest is much more valuable than being wealthy. Proverbs 19:1, better is the poor who walks with his integrity than one who is perverse in his lips and is a fool. You'd be much better off keeping your integrity than getting an extra dollar. Because in the end, wealthy gains by deceit are just fleeting. And that's what God says in Proverbs 21:6. Getting treasure by a lying tongue is the fleeting fantasy of those who seek death. And why is that? Because all of this is just temporal anyway. And those lies, those deceit for false gain, they won't last either. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 19, the truthful lip shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. You think about that. How many times have you gone into a business relationship, either as a seller or as a buyer, and been burned by that relationship? How often does that happen? Usually just one time. Yeah, that person, they took advantage of you, or you took advantage of them, but it likely only happens one time. But if you're honest with someone, if you deal fairly and truthfully with them, how long does that last? Truthful lips shall be established forever. How do we deal with each other as Christians? Well, Christians are not to defraud each other. We're to deal honestly with each other. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 6, that no one should take advantage of or defraud his brother in this matter, because the Lord is the avenger of all such, as we also forewarned you and testified. We as Christians should deal fairly and honestly with each other. We should not also misrepresent our competition. Now, I'm in the healthcare business, and there are many of you. I mean, we live in a community where you have two choices. You either go to Cox Health or you either go to Mercy. And I work for one of those organizations, but I know many people. You know people. There are members of this congregation who work at Cox and members that work at Mercy. I know physicians that work at both. And in the end, we're all here to as hospitals, we're all here to do the same thing. There isn't quite as much competition in healthcare in that regard as it might be like if I was in a lawn mowing business and Matt was in the lawn mowing business. Well, you know, Matt, you know, he doesn't trim the yard, but every other mowing, and I trim every time. You know, well, maybe Matt does trim every time. We aren't supposed to degrade our competition. In working in business, there are going to be people who sell the same product as you, but we shouldn't defame them. Proverbs chapter 26, verses 24 through 26. He who hates disguises it with his lips and lays up deceit within his heart. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. If you find yourself in a business where you're competing against others, speak kindly of your competition. Speak honestly of them, but speak kindly of them. Don't deceive just for your own gain. And likewise, don't use flattering words. The world calls this buttering up, right? I don't know, maybe that's just what my family calls it. But you know, you want to go into some sort of business dealing. Okay, well, I wasn't really intending on saying this, but I'll give you an example of this. The lady at the cafeteria, this is, maybe I shouldn't be telling this story, but I always am nice to her. And the reason I'm nice to the lady that serves at the cafeteria, why do you think I'm nice to her? Because I might get a little bit extra. And now that I'm giving this lesson, maybe that isn't the right example to give. But I think you understand the point. That we sometimes flatter people for our own gain. In my case, gain might be the wrong kind of gain. Well, I'm going down a rabbit hole. Maybe I shouldn't. Here's the point. Don't use flattering words. Proverbs chapter 26, verse 28. We already read this passage, but the first part of it says, a lying tongue hate those who are crushed by it, and a flattering mouth runs ruin. A flattering mouth runs ruin. When you flatter for your own gain, really, you run yourself into ruin. And why is that? Well, have you ever been on the opposite side of flattery? What do you think when you're on the opposite side of obvious flattery? What do they really want? Just tell me what you want. You know, oh, hey, I just want to let you know you're such a great guy, you know. Okay, you don't ever tell me this. What do you want? We're suspicious. Why is that? Because flattery is an sign of entrapment. Proverbs 29:5, a man who flatters his neighbors spreads a net for his feet. What are you really trying to do? You're trying to trap your neighbor. Now, of course, politeness, kind words, those are appropriate, and they ought to be sincere. And so when I think about my relationship with the cafeteria lady, I am sincere in it. So, but I am glad that she maybe gives me an extra scoop. Anyway, okay, moving on. Those are some general rules about our interactions in business. If we were to sum it up with one word, honesty. We ought to be honest. One of the books that was given to me, which I at least read the title and remember the title of the book, was called The Speed of Trust. And it talks about a relationship that Warren Buffett had with someone else. I don't recall the situation, but he trusted the person. And so they made this multiple million-dollar deal on a handshake. Stuff that happened 50 years ago happened today because Warren Buffett trusted the person. They didn't have to go through all the legal mumbo jumbo that businesses have to go through now. No, they just made a decision on a handshake because of the speed of trust. Anyway, that was the point of that book. Point is, be honest in our relationships. All right, let's talk about employers. I know that Clayton's the boss. Eric supervises people. I'm the boss. I tell the girl at the desk, what'd you do today? I bossed today. So that's why they can't be bossy, because I'm bossy. Let's talk about being employers. And whether or not you in your occupation are an employer, all of us at some point in time have hired someone to do something for us. And we, in that situation, are the employer. So what does the Bible tell us about how we should conduct ourselves as the employer? Well, it's interesting. Most of what the Bible talks about relative to employers is about compensation. It's about how we pay the people who are working for us. Workers have the right to be paid for their efforts. Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 4, talks about, you shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain. Now, Jesus later on and and Paul uses it as well to talk about that we ought to be able to pay evangelists for the work that they do. I think it's Paul that used that phrase. But the point here is that if you do work, you ought to be rewarded for it. And so workers have a right to be paid for their efforts. When Jesus sent out his disciples, this is what he had to say in Matthew chapter 10, verses 9 through 10. Provide neither gold nor silver nor copper in your money belts, nor bag for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor staffs, for a worker is worthy of his food. Well, what was the point of that? As the apostles went out, people were going to help them. And Jesus says, a worker is worthy of his food. Meaning, the work that you do, you should be compensated for. And so Jesus is telling them, don't take all this extra stuff. You're not going to need it because you will be taken care of. Using unpaid labor is condemned in the Bible. And you think, well, that seems pretty straightforward. Well, it happens, doesn't it? Jeremiah chapter 22, verse 13. Woe to him who builds his house by unrighteousness and his chambers by injustice, who uses his neighbor's service without wages and gives him nothing for his work. You ever worked with someone? Maybe you were the employee in that situation. And getting paid was like pulling teeth. Emily worked in the construction business for about a year. It seems to be somewhat prevalent in the construction business that getting paid seems to be an issue. That it just, I did some work, I need to be paid for it. And so if we are in that relationship as the employer, we need to pay for the work that is being done for us. We shouldn't expect work to be done and not pay for it. Using unpaid labor is condemned. And why is that? Because workers have a right to be paid. They have a right to fair wages as well. Malachi chapter 3, verse 5, and I will come near you for judgment. I will be swift witness against sorcerers, against adulterers, against perjurers, against those who exploit wage earners and widows and orphans, and those who turn away an alien because they do not fear me, says the Lord of hosts. This is interesting. There's this list of things that God condemns, things like sorcery, adultery, perjury, and then what does it say? Those who exploit wage earners, and those who exploit widows, and those who exploit orphans. Isn't it interesting? There's those three groups together. What do they all have in common? They're at the mercy of others, aren't they? At this time, who took care of the widows? I mean, their husbands had died. They needed someone to take care of them. Orphans had no family. They needed someone to take care of them. And wage earners, in the same way, are at the mercy of those who pay them. And so, in Malachi, God says, God condemns those who exploit wage earners. And why? Because they don't fear the Lord. Some will take advantage of those who have limited choice. Proverbs chapter 22:22, do not rob the poor because he is poor, nor oppress the afflicted at the gate. Why am I going into all of this? Well, we have a society that allows for this kind of thing. And the best example of this is you have an opportunity to hire someone to do some work at your house, whatever you want it to be. You could hire a laborer and pay them $15 an hour. Or maybe you might find that you can hire an illegal alien, someone who's an illegal immigrant to the United States, and pay them something far less. Maybe pay them $5 an hour to do their work. And why do you do that? Well, because they're in a position where they can't complain or go elsewhere for work. Now, we might not do this, but this stuff happens in the United States all the time, where people exploit those who are poor, less fortunate. Of course, I should clarify, this doesn't mean that there can't be low-paying jobs. The Bible doesn't teach that everyone has to be paid exorbitantly well. There's a huge push today for increasing the minimum wage, and those who push for that just really don't understand the real economic impact and harm that they're causing on themselves by pushing for higher hourly wages. It just increases all goods and services. But this is what the Bible has to say about work and wages. Ultimately, the worker must decide what he is willing to work for. Remember in Matthew chapter 20, verses 1 through 2, Jesus gives a parable. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them to his vineyards. And then what happened? He came back, found some more, and said, will you work? They agreed for a denarius a day. They worked. It was the last hour of the day. He found people who still hadn't been working. They agreed for a denarius a day, and they worked for just 1 hour. The point here is that the Bible doesn't speak about how much people should get paid. The Bible says that we should agree to a wage. And so, whether it's a high wage or a low wage, if the wage is appropriate and is acceptable on both ends, then it's appropriate. But workers have a right to be paid in full and paid in a timely manner. James chapter 5, verse 4, indeed, the wages of the laborer who mowed your field, which you kept back by fraud, cry out, and the cries of the reaper have reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. We as employers, whether we're hiring someone or whether we are managers, as it comes to wages, we're obligated to pay in full and pay timely. And don't take advantage. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 14 and 15. You shall not oppress the hired servant who is poor and needy, whether one of your brothers or one of the aliens who is in your land within your gates. Each day you shall give him his wages, and let not the sun go down on it, for he is poor and has set his heart on it, lest he cry out against you and to the Lord, and it be sin to you. What's the point? The point here is that pay people fairly. The Bible talks a lot about employers paying their employees. One other thing that's interesting, last week Brad talked about the week, and one of the things he talked about was the Sabbath, and on the Sabbath there was rest. I thought it was interesting the story they told about the man who decided that he was going to be more efficient by working, instead of working a five-day week, he was going to work a seven-day week. Sort of goes against the principles of the Bible. And relative to our topic, the same is true here. People need to be given rest. If you have employees or if you hire someone, give them an opportunity to rest. God rested from his labors and used it as a precedent for Israel to have a law of rest on the Sabbath day. Jesus also made sure his disciples had a chance to rest. Mark chapter 6, verses 31 through 32. And he said to them, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. Jesus made sure his apostles, those who he supervised in a way, had an opportunity to rest. One other thing about being the employer, work for your employee. I always tell my employees when I first meet with them that I'm the least important person in the department. My job is to make sure that you can do your job. And if you're not here, patients feel it. If I'm not here, the patients don't really notice. My job is to work for you. And that seems to be a biblical principle as well. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 9. And you, masters, do the same things to them, giving up threatenings, knowing that your own master also is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. How do you motivate your employees? How do you motivate people to work? Do you motivate them by getting in and showing them how to do the work? Or do you threaten them? Do you use threats as a means of motivation? If that's how you treat your employees, then your master, God, he may very well treat you the same. Give your employees justice and fairness. Colossians chapter 4, verse 1. Masters, give your bondservants what is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. Both of these last two passages bring out a point that I think is important for us. We might be the boss at work. We might hire someone and then therefore be their boss. But in the end, we all have someone above us. We might be the master of something, but in the end, God is our master. Okay, I know that didn't apply to everyone. This next likely applies to everyone, and that is, what does the Bible say about employees? Well, the Bible speaks differently about employees. Let's first address this topic. If possible, get paid for doing something you enjoy. You ever been in a job that you hate? Like, not doing a job that you hate. Like, I don't particularly enjoy, I don't know, gardening as an example. But I don't get paid to garden. I mean, if I had a job where I had to garden all day, I would hate it. But there's people here who love gardening. And if you could get paid to garden, you would love that job, wouldn't you? So do a job. Get paid for something that you enjoy doing. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 22 through 24. For what has a man for all his labor, and for the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful, and his work burdensome. Even in the night, his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. Nothing is better for a man that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. You see the contrast there? There are people who hate their job. Maybe you have been one of those people. Maybe you are one of those people where you just loathe going to work. Well, what happens when you stop working and you come home? You loathe being at home because you're thinking about the terrible job you have. But when you have a great job, a job that you enjoy doing, know that that's a gift from God. So if at all possible, get paid to do something you enjoy. There must also be a balance. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10, we're told, "For even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat." So, just because you're not in a job that you love doesn't mean that you should quit that job and wait for the perfect job to come around. Do you know someone who has not worked for months and months, or maybe never at all, because that perfect job has never come around? Well, there's a balance there, right? God wants you to be in a labor that you love, but He doesn't want you to not labor at all and be a burden to everyone because you can't find that perfect job. Because 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, if you don't work, well, you shouldn't eat. Any job that pays and is in your spare time looking for a better job, you should take. You know, if you're not in a job that you love, well, stay in it. Continue to look for a job that you love, but provide for your family. A good job is a gift from God. We read about it in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 24. But also in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 12 and 13, we have it reiterated to us. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labors. It is the gift of God. Find a job that you love and stay in it. The next thing as employees that we're supposed to do is we're supposed to respect our employer. And when I told you we were going to talk about business and the relationship with employers and employees, I suspect that you probably came to this as your first thought. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, let as many bondservants as are under the yoke count their own masters worthy of all honor, so that the name of God and His doctrine may not be blasphemed. And those who have believing masters, let them not despise them because they are brethren, but rather serve them because those who are benefited are believers and beloved. Teach and exhort these things. Here, Paul tells Timothy about the relationship between bondservants and masters. Very similar relationship between employee and employers. If you are the employee, if you're the bondservant, what is your relationship with your master, your employer, supposed to be? Well, you're supposed to respect them. You're supposed to give them all honor. And why are you supposed to do that? You're supposed to do it in that the name of God might not be blasphemed. If you're a bad employee and your employer knows that you're a member of the church, what then do they think about the church? And if you have a believing master, I think I would love to work for another member of the church. I've never had that opportunity. I know some of you have. Now, does that mean you're always going to see eye to eye? No, it doesn't mean that you're going to always see eye to eye. That's why we're told, for those who have believing masters, let them not despise them. Why? Because they're brethren. You should be glad that you have a master, an employer, who has the same spiritual goals that you do. Don't argue with the boss. I might put this on my door as I go at work. Titus chapter 2, verse 9. Exhort bondservants to be obedient to their own masters and be well-pleasing in all things, not answering back. How often have you been in the situation where your employer has told you something and you just want to fire right back? The Bible tells us don't do that. And you know what? How many of you have worked for a bad boss? When I interview employees, when I interview candidates, I have a series of questions that I ask. And one of the questions that I ask is, tell me about the worst boss you've ever had. And it's kind of a trap question. I ask that not because it gives me any value, except for it tells me a little bit about their character. Because if they start going on and on and on about how terrible a person was, well, I'm going to guess that they probably will go on and on and on about me when I have to make a decision or tell them to do something that I know is not going to be popular. And so it's kind of a trap question. But if you ever worked for a bad boss, the Bible talks about that too. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 18 through 20. Servants, be submissive to your own masters with all fear. This is Peter saying the same thing that Paul said. Servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh. For this is commendable, if because of conscience towards God, one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. For what credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. So when you find yourself with an employer who treats you poorly, what are you to do? Well, you're supposed to have the same fear and respect and reverence and honor to the harsh employer as you are to the good employer. And next, we're also to be honest. Don't steal from your employer. Titus chapter 2, verses 9 and 10, exhort bondservants to be obedient to their own masters, to be well-pleasing in all things, not answering back, not pilfering, but showing all good fidelity, that they may adorn the doctrine of God, our Savior, in all things. Verse 10 starts with not pilfering. Don't steal from your employer. I think it sort of goes without saying, but what can you steal from your employer? Well, you know, you could steal money. Remember when I worked as a waiter one night, the cash register didn't come up right. And someone had taken some money from the cash register. They had an opportunity, and they took money. It was one of the employees. And maybe we think that. Maybe we think, oh, I'm going to steal some ink pen or something from work. But it's more than that, too. Don't steal time from your employer. Your employer is paying you to do work. Work for your employer. Don't goof off. Give sincere obedience. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 5 through 6. Servants, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and sincerity of heart, as to Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive the same from the Lord, whether he is slave or free. Now, how are we supposed to interact with our employees? We're supposed to serve our employers just as though Christ was standing right there and he was our boss. If Jesus was your boss, would you work hard? Absolutely, you would work hard. And you should work hard for your boss, because we are to serve not eye service, not just to please people, but as though we were serving Christ. There's a few other things we could say, but I want to get down to this issue of success. The natural result of labor is profit. Proverbs chapter 14, 23, in all labor there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. Proverbs 13 and 11, wealth gained by dishonesty will be diminished, but he who gathers by labor will increase. The Bible tells us that if you work hard, you will be rewarded for it. The natural result of labor is profit. So when we succeed, are we to be worried about that? A successful business does not necessarily imply that the wealth was gained dishonestly. You ever seen someone who's successful and think, they cheated their way to the top or something like that? Well, that certainly could have happened, but it doesn't mean that it happens that way. The Bible speaks of righteous and wealthy people. Abraham, Job, all of these gained wealth honestly through hard work and through God's blessing. We are a congregation who have lots of successful people. Did we all gain that through dishonesty? No, I would hope not. God has commands to wealthy Christians. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17 through 19, command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Let them do good, that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share, storing up for themselves a good foundation for the time to come, as they may lay hold on eternal life. There were Christians who were well-to-do in the first century. There were Christians who were poor, too. There are Christians today who are well-to-do, and there are those who are poor. Many of those who are well-to-do are that way because God has blessed them. I think about the decisions that have happened in my life, the career path that I've taken, and I can't help but see the hand of God in that. That I had an opportunity to go train in Texas for a year, and instead I decided to come here and marry Emily. That was a positive thing that I passed up another positive thing for. I had an opportunity to advance from one job into a different job. I was the most qualified person for that job, and I didn't get that job. It was a negative thing. But because I didn't get that, my career went this way. And because it went that way, I had an opportunity to start a school. Because I started a school, I had an opportunity to get into management. All of those choices, all of those decisions, all of those things in life led to where I am now. And I know that God led some of those decisions, maybe all of those decisions. And so in lots of ways, everything that I have, everything that you have, is really a gift from God. It's not your own. And I've prospered because God has allowed me to prosper. And in that, Paul reminds Timothy to tell the Christians who are rich in this present age that they have obligations. Don't trust in the riches, but take care of others. Proverbs chapter 23, 4 through 6. Do not overwork to be rich, because of your own understanding cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle towards heaven. I really love these two verses. Do not overwork to be rich. I have an employee that works a ridiculous number of hours. When he's not working for me, he's working for someone else. Now, I don't know his financial situation. I don't know if he's working out of greed or maybe he's working because he has a lot of debt. I really don't know. But he works a lot. If I was working, I would feel like him. I would feel overworked. There are people that you know and I know who overwork to become rich. And the Bible says don't do that. Why? Because riches have wings. They will fly away. Seeking wealth comes with danger. What do we know about 1 Timothy 6, 9 and 10? Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. There's more we could say, but just because you find yourself successful in your labor and have made a profit doesn't inherently mean that it's a negative thing, but it does mean that you have a greater obligation to those who do not. That's the lesson for this morning. It doesn't really lend itself well to an invitation except to say this. Jesus reminds his apostles, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And if your treasure is in money, if you consume yourself with work, you're not going to be consuming yourself with God. We ought to place our heart in heaven, work towards heaven, work here on earth so that we can provide for our family and provide for others. And in the end, if we're found faithful, God will save us. If you haven't found yourself in that condition, if you've not named Jesus, you have an opportunity now, as you do any time, to make correction, make those things known. And please, if we can help in any way, let it be known as we stand and sing.